off the coast of North Africa between Tunisia and Libya, some have suggested. And what is the fruit? Sundry candidates have been advanced. Clover, persimmon, water lily. Which last is how the shape of lotus is usually represented and conforms with the lotus of India and other countries further east. The blue Nile lotus is perhaps the most likely, since it does apparently have soporific and psychotropic properties. My own candidate, for what it's worth, takes into consideration the fact that lettuce is well known for its soporific qualities too. Beatrix Potter remarks upon it in The Tale of the Flopsy Bunnies, where it sends the young rabbits to sleep. One cultivar of lettuce popular to this day, especially under its American name, romaine, is the Kos lettuce. And what is Kos, but a Greek island? The land of the lettuce eaters. I rest my case. Tennyson's poem, The Lotus Eaters, captures the mood and meaning of the adventure perfectly. Let us swear an oath and keep it with an equal mind, in the hollow lotus land to live and lie reclined, on the hills like gods together, careless of mankind. Surely, surely, slumber is more sweet than toil, the shore than labour in the deep mid-ocean, wind and wave and oar. O rest, ye brother mariners, we will not wander more. The Cyclopes. Mind you, the next island we happened upon, well, I can't pretend it didn't have its hazards too. Let us call it less ultimately dangerous than the land of the lotus eaters, but more immediately frightening. Now, many words, phrases, and epithets are attributed to Odysseus of Ithaca. The more kindly disposed call me clever and wise. The stories I'm going to share with you will soon correct that notion. I've heard versatile, adaptable, and resourceful. Those I can live with. It's more common to hear words like cunning, wily, crafty, and subtle, usually accompanied by a sniff of disapproval. Not especially likeable, those names. But the word that I think best explains me is curious. You see, I like to know. New people, new places, and new ideas, they appealed to me. A blessing and a curse, as you will see. Anyway, we arrived at this new island by night and in fog, but the next morning we were favoured with clear sunlight. I summoned the men, gathered some supplies, and explained my purpose. If I'm right, then this must be the island home of the Cyclopes. There was something of a murmur at this announcement, maybe more of a groan than a murmur. A race of one-eyed giants, not, shall we say, celebrated for their intelligence, grace, or imagination. But what do we really know of them? We know that they don't build ships for travel, trade, and intercourse with other peoples. They don't, I have heard, even cultivate their good soil. They let their flocks of goats and sheep run wild over the land and take everything they need from them. Cheese, milk, meat, wool, and skins. Grapes grow wild in abundance here, so they make wine, but without system. It tastes dreadful, I'm told. I wonder, though, do they respect the gods and welcome strangers? Let's find out. As payment for any hospitality we might receive, I carried a goatskin of that very strong vintage that Prince Maron of Ismarus had presented to me. I had spared him and his family when we raided the Sicones, and in gratitude he gave me 12 jars of their extraordinarily concentrated wine. For every measure, it required 20 of water to dilute it down into something that wouldn't knock you out cold. When mixed right, it was of the most miraculous quality. Leaving my lieutenant, Eurylochus, in charge of the ships, I selected 12 of my bravest men, and off we went.